I think that UK has the advantage that the users are more educated. If we keep on fighting, we have to do something that helps our customers. And that's why we sort of took the extra effort and built the payment branch in Germany.
Herzlich willkommen zum Fintech-Podcast von Payment and Banking. In unserem wöchentlichen Podcast sprechen wir mit interessanten Köpfen aus der Branche über unsere Hauptthemen Fintech, Payment, Banking und Mobile.
Herzlich willkommen zu unserem 259. Fintech, Payment und Banking Podcast. Heute sprechen wir über das Thema Banking, SME Banking in UK mit Holvi und dem Jochen zusammen. Grüß dich, Jochen. Wie geht's
Hallo,
dir
im Homeoffice? Gut, heute kein richtiges Homeoffice, heute Urlaub, aber de facto ähnlich.
Okay. Bevor wir starten und auch ins Englische switchen, wir haben heute einen englisch sprechenden Gast, kurz, wie bei jeder Folge am Anfang, danke an unsere Sponsoren, ohne die das Ganze nicht möglich wäre. Wir haben diesmal die Mastercard dabei, lange bekannt, langjähriger Partner von Payment and Banking. Vielen Dank euch und ja, danke, dass ihr uns supportet und weiter supporten werdet. Okay, so let's switch into English. We want to talk about SME banking in the UK. We had the CEO of Holvi as one of our guests here. AJ, welcome at the Payment and Banking Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Before we jump into the topic, do we just want to start a little bit with the intro about yourself and about Holvi? Just tell us a little bit about what is Holvi about, what was the idea behind that, and also something about yourself, your background, and yeah, would be great.
Okay. So let's start talking about Holvi. So Holvi was founded early on in 2011 already by a bunch of computer experts, micro entrepreneurs who were struggling with finding the right kind of finance tools to manage their business, and as all startups, they did a couple of things before they then pivoted to building this sort of micro business banking, and what propelled them to that was that Holvi received this payment institution license in 2014 from the Finnish regulator, the FinFSA. And then the company grew and in 2015 launched some pilots outside of Finland in Germany and Austria. And then in 2016 was acquired by the Spanish bank called BBVA. And then in 2017, in the beginning of 2017, I was hired as the CEO of Holvi to basically then help scale the service in a number of additional countries and within those countries that we were already in. And a few words about my background. I've really always been building new business in corporate setups, so in corporate startups, either managing the corporate venturing portfolios like I did at Nokia, or then before Holvi, I acquired a gaming company to this larger Finnish company as part of that, and then managed that for 4 years, and then was basically called about Holvi, and when I heard about it, I'd already seen Holvi at Slush the previous year, and I really liked their product. It was simple, to the point. It was solving the problem, and so when they called me about the opportunity, I thought for a little while and then jumped on board.
That's fantastic that you also have a gaming background, because that's not so many people in financial services who have a gaming background. Same for me. I was at BigPond and then moved back to financial service. So the gaming financial service guys are always great.
So no, I actually don't have any background in financial services, and that's one of the things that attracted me to Holvi. Because of course, financial services is in this great undergoing this great disruption, And it's always interesting to be in an industry where you know changes are happening. And since I hadn't been working in a financial services company, I thought that again it's an opportunity to learn.
And you're doing your business still out of Finland mainly, or is it more or less different locations all around Europe? So how is your setup there?
So our headquarters is in Helsinki in Finland, and most of our staff is in Helsinki. But as I said, we already in 2015 started offering our services in Germany, and Germany has grown over the years to be our key market, and so therefore, last year we actually set up a payment branch in Germany, and have an office that's been growing. I think we already have about 30 people in an office in Berlin. So a payment branch that's supervised by BaFin. We are in Germany in that sense as well.
Okay. So before we jump to the UK topic, just some questions about Germany. How do you see the German market, and what was the reason for Holvi to choose more or less Germany as one of the first non-Finnish markets for you? What was unexpected and what was expected about Germany?
Well, I guess the idea about Germany, I mean, the obvious reason for choosing Germany is that it is the economic engine of Europe. It's the largest, it's the strongest economy. The population is large and it has a lot of economic activity. From the top down view, it's a market where you need to succeed in order to succeed in Europe, and the vision of Holvi has always been to be a pan-European player for these micro businesses. Of course, now in hindsight, having been in Germany now for 3-4 years, it wasn't the easiest market to start with in terms of acceptance of card payments, in terms of the level of digitalization, but it has evolved quite significantly over the years, and right now we believe that it's absolutely key in being a pan-European provider to be in Germany.
Yeah. Can you provide some background on Holvi itself? Because we came together or got in touch because Andre and I recorded a podcast and we were discussing about the Holvi expansion to the UK, and then we shortly touched base on your history about the acquisition, etc. Can you also elaborate a little bit on that about the history of Holvi and where you came from?
Well, I can only speak sort of firsthand experience from the 2nd of January 2017. So everything else I've heard from somebody else, but the acquisition happened in March of 2016 and was part of BBVA's part of BBVA's digital expansion or building new digital businesses and building new capabilities. And they felt that the company had something very interesting to offer to an underserved segment, the freelancers and micro businesses. And the other interesting aspect was that it was outside footprint of BBVA, in other words, operating in large European countries that weren't where BBVA did not have retail presence. So it was also an opportunity to understand and learn about those markets. Go ahead.
And they kept you separate, so you still act as a separate entity, and you're not fully integrated into BBVA, right?
Yes, definitely. So, as I said, we have our separate payment institution license from the Finnish regulator, and that's kind of where we report to in terms of regulatory matters. On top of that, now having the payment branch in Germany, we also report in some aspects, mainly AML, to BaFin as well, in the German regulator. But we have been kept as a separate entity. We run our services, as you know, under our own brand, and I believe that's part of the success of Holvi within the BBVA structure, is that we're able to operate independently and in an agile fashion.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and the original team is already in place, the founders, or was there a cut after the acquisition through BBVA?
So when the company was acquired, there were, I think, around 20 people in the company. Mm-hmm. When I joined in the beginning of 2017, we had about 50 people. Now we have something around 130 people right now, and we do have one of the founders still with us, Tuomas Toivonen, who's I don't know if you've met Tuomas, but I think he's one of the greatest minds in Europe around fintech, knows everything about fintech inside out, and he's still with the company very much, and I think it's a great thing that we still have him, and he really guides us in everything around sort of financial technology decisions.
Okay, great. So let's jump over to the UK. What was from Holvi's side the motivation to say, okay, now you enter UK as a market, which is on the one hand still somehow from a business and regulatory point of view Europe, but not 100% like the other countries, and from the outside viewing is still at least could be seen as a crowded market. So what was your motivation to say, okay, let's jump into the UK and try to get a footprint there?
Well, first of all, the 5 to 6 million micro businesses in the UK was clearly the biggest attraction. You know, there's a large group of people in the UK who are exactly the kinds of people that we think we can serve the best. They're contractors, they're freelancers, they're sort of knowledge workers who are selling their knowledge to larger corporations and need to run their business by themselves. You know, they need to know their ins and outs. They need to know how their business is doing in real time. They need to be able to send invoices to their customers and follow on getting paid. All of that put together, we thought that you know, they are spot on the kind of customer group that we believe we can serve the best. On top of that, of course, with the UK having had these sort of digital banks or neobanks for much longer than say Germany, the country and the population and our customer segment is much more aware of these alternative solutions to banking, and I think that's one of the most important things when selecting a market, is that there is awareness of fintechs and acceptance of fintechs. I think that the biggest obstacle of any fintech currently in retail banking is to get the awareness and the acceptance of the general public that you know they can, that, you know, that people will consider them as an option and actually understand that they're a better option than the high street banks. And when we talk about competition, it's really the high street banks who hold most of this customer base. Most of these customers already have a bank account in one of the high street banks, and our job together with the other fintechs is to convince them that there's a better option.
Yeah. And if you compare the market in the UK and maybe also with Germany and other European markets, is the gap which you are using as the same in the UK as in Germany? Means a target group, the SME target groups, the sole traders, freelancers, however you call them, who are mainly undersolved or under supported by the existing incumbents. Is this the same situation there, or is there big differences between the markets?
Well, as I said, I think our view is that the UK audience is much more educated about the possibilities. But the main reason for using somebody like us is the same across Europe. So having similar needs of being able to get paid and also pay your business expenses, in other words, get your ins and outs together into a single platform, and having all of that information in digital format so that you can then push it to your accountant at the end of the month, and you don't have to go to the accountant with a plastic bag full of receipts. Is, you know, those things are the same across Europe. I think that UK has the advantage that the users are more educated.
If you look at Europe, we all know it's not a standard market, which is across the same across the whole continent. And when it comes to accounting and the tools and the setup in SME space, this differs greatly. How do you tackle that? Because I assume that from Finland to Germany to UK, you need to have different service providers, different partners to build up an ecosystem for the SMEs.
Well, that's true. So to pick up on your first point about the Europe not being a single market, that's very true, and that's one of the things that coming from outside financial services, I was very surprised to find out about. I mean, the reason why we went and created a payment branch in Germany, one of the reasons was that we needed to be able to offer DEI bans to our customers, and the only way to get there was to actually have a payment branch in Germany, and the same applies across all of the other EU countries, and there's absolutely no reason why this should be the case. At least nobody's been able to tell me, why do you have to build a payment branch in a country, in a European country or EU country, when you're licensed in one country? So why do you have to bring additional compliance and regulation in order to get access to the local IBANs? Across the different markets, I think this is more of a sort of an anti-competition measure by the member states, so that they make it more difficult for somebody to enter the market. And you know, we've been making a lot of noise. N26 has been making a lot of noise, but the situation just doesn't seem to change.
So
I was just going to say, so that's the one thing that I think is like the symbol of not being a single financial services market. And then of course the other things, EU is trying to harmonize. So, but still every market is quite local in different kinds of very concrete things. The invoice in Germany, for GmbH needs to have the chairman of the board, the name of the chairman of the board, and the names of the board members, and the name of the managing director in the invoice. Doesn't have to be like that in Finland or the UK. So a lot of the things that we do around what we call contextual banking for micro businesses, has to do with getting the local local things right, getting the local flavors right, and you're absolutely right in the fact that the accounting practices are slightly different. For sure, the accounting systems are different in different countries. But then again, to sort of make it easier for us, the kind of the principles of accounting, especially for the small businesses, are similar. So what you need to do is you need to get your income and your expenses gathered together in some format, and then you need to report them. It's just, per country, it differs a little bit, but still the basis of collecting your information digitally, which, for example, the Holvia service allows you to do, is the starting point.
Just want to add one point regarding the point about is Europe really one market or not? So it's clearly not the case, and it's clearly a long way to go to have that. Exactly, we also saw that because we have as for our business who is operating the podcast and our website and Holvi account, and in the past we had that 2 years ago, and it was an FI IBAN, yeah? FI and then the normal number, not the German one. Yeah? And the larger German players, also larger German banks, did not transfer money to an FI bank account. So we had to switch to a DE IBAN for that point of view. And I clearly agree with you. There's no technical reason, there's no regulatory point of reason why you cannot transfer money to an FI account. It's clearly protecting an existing markets and make hurdles. Huh? So that's obviously the case. Yeah? And that was not the idea for having a single market.
Actually, your point, my point about getting access, a provider getting access to the local IBANs, I think is a regulatory cartel type of a anti-competition measure. But what you just described, which is called IBAN discrimination, that's against EU law. I mean, totally. we fought in 2017 and 18. We fought against these providers and these banks who were telling the customers of our customers that sending money to an FI IBAN is a foreign payment and has a surcharge and that's illegal. But it just happened. So we realized that we're fighting a trend that's not going to change, and it doesn't help our customers if we keep on fighting. We have to do something that helps our customers, and that's why we sort of took the extra effort and built the payment branch in Germany, because we felt that that's the only way to really break through.
Totally. What I found interesting also about Holvi, as you mentioned, you were compared to maybe other fintech players in the SME and B2B banking market quite early in the market. So you started 7-8 years ago, and you had the chance. So, or in parallel, all these large B2C challenger banks are going, at least from a valuation point of view, to the roof. Number 26, Revolut, also the UK banks. How did that help you to maybe piggyback on their their more or less education the market journey, that you said, hey, that's good for us because they educate the market, they educate the people. And if you look at SMEs or smaller businesses, there's maybe not a clear distinction between business and private people. So sometimes the user experience is similar, sometimes the needs are similar. So how did they help you more or less for free to educate the people?
You know, I think that's exactly to the point that I was making earlier about the UK market. But of course, some of these players also operate outside the UK market. And 26, of course, not even starting in the UK, but starting out in Austria and Germany. I think that's exactly the point that the awareness is growing about these alternative players. That it doesn't mean that if you were given a Sparkasse account when you sort of turned seven or whenever people give them, whenever people set up the accounts for their kids, it doesn't mean that you have to be there for the rest of your lives. But there are alternatives, and in particular, there are specialized alternatives for different parts and different tasks. So of course, the consumer the digital consumer account has the largest or the widest appeal, and it's very natural that some of the players in that space have grown fast in terms of getting accounts created. But I do believe that there's also a space for more specialized segments, like the small businesses and freelancers across the different markets. And all of the fintechs together are helping build that awareness of a better alternative than the traditional banks.
If we look at, you mentioned N26, if you look at the UK, N26 withdrew from the market, referencing the strong competition and the Brexit regulation stuff. You did it the other way around, announcing that you now enter the market. Why did you do, or why do you see the market development, obviously completely different compared to the guys from N26? What is that drove you to go to UK instead of other European countries?
Well, the UK, as well, I mentioned that it's an educated market. It has a culture of contracting and a strong freelancer culture. And there are already players there building awareness. I mentioned the figure 5 to 6 million of these micro businesses. If you believe any of the numbers that we hear from the market of players specializing in SMEs, they're only scratching the surface. So I don't think that there is that there isn't an opportunity there to serve this customer base and to do it at least as well as the competition, or even better, as we believe we can do. So the market is big enough. That's one thing. The other thing that is works in our favor is the fact that in the UK the IBANs are not widely used, but they use their sort codes and account numbers, which we get access to as well. So again, from the payments, from the sort of the core payments point of view, we do not have the same sort of localization obstacles that we would have in another interesting market, say France. So that's another thing that works in the favor of the UK. And then thirdly, I think that if you just look at the three large markets in Europe, they are the UK, Germany, and France. In terms of digital banking, and I think that rather than at this point going to France, it made more sense for us to go to the UK regardless of Brexit.
Yeah. And how do you tackle the regulatory stuff? So probably after Brexit, you cannot passport your licenses to the UK. You need to apply for a local license. Is that the plan? Do you have a license already? So how do you tackle it from a regulatory point of view?
So from the regulatory point of view, when last year when Brexit, it became more real that Brexit was really, really going to happen, the FCA already launched this sort of grace period trend. What was the name of it again? Transitional. TPR, I think, is the short version of it. But anyway, there's like a 3-year grace period that you could apply for coming from the EU for your license, and we were granted that last year already. And now when kind of Brexit entered into force in January, they said that there's going to be a transition period until the end of this year. And then after that, that 3-year grace period starts, and we believe that there's enough runway there to build the business and then see what happens during that 3-year TPR period. Nobody knows, at least we don't know, and we haven't heard from anywhere how then FCA, the local regulator, is going to, what kind of an approach are they going to take towards people like us? But of course, if the business, if and when the business is big enough and merits a license, we will then do whatever the local regulation demands us. But for this year, during the transition period, we passport just like we would passport in the EU. And after that, we have that 3-year period to figure out how things go.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah. So next to the Brexit, and at the moment, I think there's no chance to have a podcast or any type of discussion without tackling the Corona thing. How do you see at the moment the combination of Brexit and Corona in the UK, which is a quite special situation, and I think also for a lot of businesses a challenging situation, mainly that the SME target group, as at least that's the case in Germany, is hit first from that topics, at least from the Corona topics. How do you see that for your business, threat or chance, or how do you need to adjust your business or your offering towards the Corona situation?
Well, from the customer point of view, I think pretty much the worst thing that can happen to a lot of our customers is the fact that everybody's inside and doesn't go yeah. about and do things. We have segments dance and yoga teachers, masseuses, people who run their small business and sell their kind of, their knowledge to other consumers. And these people, of course, they saw their business go away in one night.
Yeah.
So that's awful. And we've been trying to put together a lot of different kinds of information on different government programs and other stuff for these people. And we're also taking measures to lower some of the prices and waive some of the fees for these people for the period. If you look on the opportunity side, of course, a lot of the business goes digital, and we've seen customers adopt digital banking because of that. So there's also been some uptick in demand of new business accounts very recently in the past few weeks. The fact of the matter is that if our customers aren't doing well, then we aren't doing well. So far, so good. So far, our customers have been transacting and they've been using their services and bank accounts. But I'm really worried about their financial health going forward if this continues for long, because normally these freelancers and sole traders and small businesses don't have huge cash reserves and still they need to pay money out. So I really hope that we can get this lockdown mode done with. I mean, of course, in a responsible and healthy way, but still, this is killing a lot of small businesses.
Totally, and I think it's not different here. So I think that's more or less the challenge in every market, and the discussion about how to solve or how to more or less kill the lockdown, but how long that will take. And sometimes a lot of SMEs don't have the power to survive 2, 3, 4 months with mainly no revenue.
Yeah.
Are there, I think I only know it from the German side, are there any government-funded programs in the UK where Holvi can in that case profit from, that you distribute them to your SMEs and help them to survive in these tricky times?
Many of these government programs have to do with loans, guaranteed loans in one way or another. And because we're a payment institution, we're not capable of taking part in these lending schemes in the different markets. But we haven't yet found a way to be able to sort of distribute government funds in any of the markets. But of course, we're constantly monitoring the situation. But right now, we're not taking part in those schemes just because we can't. I mean, not because we didn't want to. We'd absolutely want to do that.
Yeah. So that means you have plans also to enter the loan and the lending market midterm, which means an upgrade or a change in your license setup. But from my point of view, I would assume that lending or loans, no matter if we have Corona times or not, is a big demand from the SME side, right? So that means it could complete your offering.
Oh yes. I think that from 2017 when I joined, we've been looking at different kinds of lending schemes and of course based on the customer need. As you say, there is clearly a need in our customer segment for for managing short-term gaps in cash flow. You know, one of the biggest pain points for these customers of ours is that their customers pay them late. Mm-hmm. And they pay them late intentionally. Mm-hmm. So these large companies that are using contractors for this and that, they're managing their cash flow and they're of course paying the larger companies faster. And this happens across all markets that these freelancers are getting paid late deliberately, and yet again they have their bills to pay. So there's clearly a need for some sort of a cash flow related lending solution, but nothing to announce yet. I mean, as I said, we've been sort of contemplating that for quite a few years.
So coming directly to that point, there is a lot of factoring startups, at least here in Germany, tackling that problem. Have you thought about partnering with factoring startups or even specialized factoring banks that offering kind of white label solution to your clients as part of the Holvi offering?
Yes, we have thought of that.
Mm. Okay.
It's obvious. Okay. Do you see from the incumbent point of view any type of reaction from their side that they see, okay, there are now players like Holvi in the market and they are tackling another segment, means the SME segment, and they need to react from an offering point of view, product point of view, communication point of view, or are they still more or less in a reactive mode and just look at you and see what happens?
I think there are. I think that's a great question. I think there are three types of activity I'm witnessing right now in the market. The most common practice is that either do nothing or actively move out of the segment. Mm-hmm. In other words, try and especially with the mid-sized banks, some of these banks are saying, we need to focus on the profit pockets, defending the profit pockets. This is a difficult segment to handle. The ticket size, the ARPPA, the average revenue per paying account isn't that much. And they still demand proper service. So either actively moving out of that segment or then just not paying attention to that segment at all. And that's probably, as I said, true to the mid-size banks. Larger banks tend to either wait and see or then do something as a countermeasure, build their own kind of service. Or then the third thing is partner with a fintech and provide in partnership services to this particular segment. So it kind of varies, but what I think is going to happen going forward is that especially in this interest rate environment that banks are more and more going to focus on the larger sized SMEs and step out of this segment. I don't think that they can make it with their cost structure, that they can make it profitable enough. And in particular with their compliance structure, being the financial supermarkets they are, I don't think that they have the agility to create services for this kind of a segment. Mm. Okay. But that's just me saying, I'm sure that they disagree.
they had to. that's their role to disagree on that. Yeah.
If you look at your international exposure, there's surely some learnings from a market that you can benefit of going to another market. So have you figured out some things that are special in the Finnish market that helps in the German market, or in the German market helping you for the UK expansion, or vice versa?
Well, on the if you talk about the segment in general, what we've learned is that the needs, the kind of what we call jobs to be done for these sole traders and freelancers, they're the same across the different geographies, but the implementation of those jobs to be done is local to a varying degree. We already touched the accounting stuff. The collection of the information is pretty much the same across all of the markets, but then the interpretation or the presentation of that information to authorities varies depending on what are the thresholds for VAT liability and what do you need to declare and what do you need not declare and what can you deduct from your income and what you can't. Those things are then local. I already mentioned the invoicing being an area where there is an EU directive on invoicing, but that very much focuses around how prices are presented, how VAT needs to be separately presented, and so forth, and leaves a lot of interpretation for local laws. So you need to kind of get into a varying degree of localization per market if you really and truly want to serve this particular segment, because that context comes from that local side. In terms of regulation, if you just do the passporting and don't go sort of for deeper regulatory integration as we did with Germany, then you're always going to be slightly at a disadvantage to the local player.
Okay.
How is as far as I know, BBVA is also invested into Atom for the UK. How is the interaction from BBVA side between companies who maybe not have a total overlap, but I think Atom also has business loans. That's something which is not yet there on your side. Is there any interaction, or do you see somebody like Atom just like another player in the market, and that's it?
Well, we have discussions with Atom from time to time, and we try to look for different ways of cooperation now that we are in the UK market, simply for the reason that we know them and they're a great bunch, Mark Mullen and his team. I really liked interacting with them. But so far, of course, any kind of collaboration or cooperation needs to be based on mutual interest. And even though we've tried to discuss some ideas from time to time, we haven't really been able to sort of prioritize on both sides something that would then come to fruition. But I'd really love to work with those guys. They're a great bunch, and I think they're doing very well.
Mm, okay, but that could also, that's maybe not a BBVA thing. That's maybe okay, they did a good job, they're open, they're discussing with everybody. That could also happen or being with another player who has nothing to do with BBVA, so the shareholder thing has nothing to do with the interaction, or
no, BBVA is not forcing us to do anything. Mm-hmm. if that's what you mean there. Mm-hmm. I think they're smart in that way, that there needs to be business on both sides for it to make sense.
Yeah. Okay.
One last question from my side. If I look at the Nordics in general, there's so many well-known big startups that came from the Nordics and became international and are to some extent, household brand names in the meantime. What do you do, guys, differently you are scaling internationally so fast and so professional and so good? Because if you look at Germany or UK or France, the larger markets, there is always also some startups that scale internationally, but we don't have such a great history like you guys in the Nordics. Is it just the smaller domestic market that make you think of going international from day one, or what is the secret sauce to build so many great startups from the Nordics?
Well, first of all, Nordics is a very very sort of heterogeneous place to start with. So Finland is very different from Sweden, which is very different from Norway, which is different from Denmark. So while people sort of bundle us all together many times, I would say that every country has its own good reasons why there are good companies coming out of these countries. I think a lot of the really big scaled startups most recently that come to my mind have come from Sweden, and I think that the reason is that the culture there, the startup culture there, has been, at least if I compare it with Finland, has been there for a little longer. It's a larger country than Finland. They've got about double the size of Finland in terms of population, and of course access to capital. It's a very rich country, and with the success of some of the startups, there's money that's being reinvested. There's capabilities that are being reinvested into those companies. So at least for the Swedish successes of late, I would say that those are probably some of the underlying reasons. Then again, I'm not an expert on the Swedish startup scheme. In Finland, I think we've had some startup successes in particular in gaming, and again that is from a long culture of gaming companies, online gaming companies. Now we're starting to get good startups from other areas like fintech as well. But again, I think it's once success breeds success, and that's what's happened in at least Finland and Sweden, to my understanding.
Okay. Also, one last question from my side. If you look at your entering and your entering process to the market UK, what was the most unexpected thing from your side? Was it okay, this was clearly seen completely different before you entered the market, and now after some time you have a little bit more experience, what was totally unexpected?
Well, there isn't, I'm trying to think on my feet, there isn't a single thing that really sort of took us by surprise, because we were sort of doing these small pilots and surveys before we entered, but maybe the level of scrutiny that you need to have in terms of fraud and financial crime is something that we knew going in that it, we would need to be careful there, but it's clear that all of the people who warned us we're talking about the right thing.
Okay, good. So I think that was a quite good round. Also, all of my questions are more or less done. Anything from your side, Jochen, to add?
No. Many thanks. Great insights.
Okay. AJ, something you want to end up to our audience as famous last words?
Well, hopefully not last words.
last for the podcast, Dad. Let's take it to be famous.
yeah. Well, no, I wish all the listeners, a healthier spring than what we've seen so far, and I know we'll pull out this together. So well, good luck, everyone.
Yeah. Same to you. Good. Then thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And thanks for the insights. Good.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.